From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Randall White in for Beth Ruyak today. The president tweeted yesterday about the 2016 Trump Tower meeting that his son took with a Russian lawyer, and it appears to contradict how he's previously characterized that meeting. There's also a highly watched congressional election in Ohio tomorrow, which has political insiders wondering whether a traditionally Republican district will flip blue. And the trial of former Trump campaign chair Paul Manafort heads into its second week, with some legal experts wondering why he hasn't yet taken a plea deal. Joining us to start off this Monday, making sense of it all, is political junkie Ken Rudin. Welcome back to Insight, and nice to speak with you again, Ken.
Randall, making sense of it all? Is there anybody who can make sense of it all?
Well, I mean, so much information now comes out at a rapid pace. It's hard for any of us to keep up. So it's nice to tune into a brain like yours that can at least help us focus a bit. Maybe not make it all sense, but sensical. We really need to start with President Trump's admission that the June 2016 meeting between Donald Trump Jr. and a Russian lawyer at Trump Tower was set up to get dirt on Hillary Clinton. This contradicts earlier denials that the meeting was about Russian adoptions. What do you make of it?
Well, the original explanation or the original story was you know, cockamamie from the beginning, because here you have Donald Trump Jr., Paul Manafort, and Jared Kushner in a meeting with a woman from Russia with connections to the Kremlin, who says she has dirt on Hillary Clinton. And the storyline at the time, back in June 2016, was that this was all about Russian adoption. Nobody bought that. Actually, when the story came out in 2017, that's when they said, no, this was about Russian adoption, had nothing to do with anything else. And nobody bought it. The fact that Donald Trump, the president, has come clean over the weekend, said, yes, this is about, we're trying to get information on our opponent, and it's totally legal. Well, it's not totally legal if you're willing to accept information or help from a foreign government or a foreign entity. And that's exactly what they were doing. This woman was from Russia with Russia ties to the Kremlin. And that she was, you know, offering or allegedly offering information about Hillary Clinton. That is illegal to do that. So, yes, we were trying to get information on an opponent. Everybody knew that from the beginning. It's done all the time in politics. That's done all the time, you know, that, and that's absolutely true, too. But with somebody from Russia, you just don't do that. That is against the law. And I remember back in 2000 when Al Gore was offered some kind of nefarious information about George W. Bush. What he did is he went to the FBI with that information. That's not what Donald Trump Jr. did.
The president has made the case that this is politics as usual. If you can get dirt on an opponent, you would do it. Is this politics as usual, meeting with a foreign government this way?
Well, if you're Donald Trump, this may be politics as usual, and that's the scary part, because, you know, we saw this very almost surreal instance the other day where you had leaders of the U.S. intelligence agencies all say that Russia tried to undermine the U.S. election integrity in 2016. They're doing it again this year, and they'll probably do it again in 2020. And yet at the same time, Donald Trump, in almost every occasion, says, well, you know, Putin told me he's not doing it, so I believe him. So it is politics as usual in this new Trump era of you know, of whatever, collusion may not be the right word, but it certainly seemed to be willing to take information that the Russians were offering in 2016 to damage their opponent.
As part of his tweet yesterday, he said with an exclamation point, I didn't know about it, or some words to that extent. Does it matter whether he knew about it or not?
Well, it does if he's lying. And here's the thing. I mean, we don't know who's telling the truth here, but Michael Cohen, Trump's former lawyer and former fixer, is ostensibly talking to the Mueller investigators, saying that President Trump was told in advance by his son about this meeting. The thought that Donald Trump Jr. would meet with somebody with Russian ties and not tell his father in the middle of a campaign is almost too ridiculous to believe. But he says, no, he knew nothing about it. Michael Cohen says otherwise. We'll see who's telling the truth, or maybe we won't.
Now, we are, what, less than 24 hours away from a special election tomorrow in Ohio that could see a red district flip blue. How do statements like this from the president upset the messaging in a district like that where the race is so close?
Well, see, that's a great question, because we've seen in Republican primaries that whatever Donald Trump says goes. Like, he was at this rally the other day in Pennsylvania for Lou Barletta, the congressman who's running for the Senate there in Pennsylvania. And if it's a Republican crown, if it's a crown of your supporters, then there'll be the amen corner. But if it's a general election, even though this district, this is Ohio's 12th district in the northern suburbs of Columbus, a Democrat hasn't won the seat since 1980. Before that, it was 1936. And yet the polls are dead even. This is the seat that John Kasich, the governor, used to hold. It's now an open seat because the Republican incumbent resigned. So basically the polls show it dead even. If the Democrats do win it, if Danny O'Connor, who's the Democratic candidate, wins this seat and the polls show it dead even, people say it could be a harbinger for November, that the Republicans should be worried. And they should be worried if it's that close. We saw when Connor Lamb won that seat in southwest Pennsylvania back in March. I mean, this is a seat that Donald Trump carried by 20 percentage points, and yet the Democrat won the seat. If that happens again tomorrow in Ohio, there's going to be headlines, you know, and maybe a wake-up call for Republicans. We'll see what happens.
So congressional races are supposed to be, anyway, about your community. It's like the most local level at the federal government. Yet this race is really all about national politics, Pelosi versus Trump, right?
Well, there's truth to that. I mean, you know, the old James Carville story saying that, you know, all politics is local. And if you're trying to run away from the president, if you're trying to run away from an unpopular president, and that could be Donald Trump in 2018. It could be Barack Obama in 2014 and 2010. So it doesn't matter if you're a Democrat or Republican. If you're unpopular first-term president, you kind of want to make the issue about local politics. The thing with Troy Balderson, who's the Republican candidate, is that he's been endorsed by both Donald Trump and John Kasich, the governor, the two of them don't particularly like each other. But he'll make the argument that if the Republican Party can be united in this race, the Republicans will keep the seat. But my goodness, it's definitely the Democrats who want to make it a national issue on Trump's, basically a referendum on Donald Trump's first 2 years in office.
Ken, you mentioned the Mueller investigation a bit ago. It's still an open question whether President Trump will sit for a voluntary interview or wait for a subpoena to challenge in court.
Well, he keeps saying, I think we hear it through, I mean, we see it through his tweets. Sometimes we hear it through his mouthpiece, Rudy Giuliani. But he says he wants to sit down and with an interview with Robert Mueller. Trump's attorneys say this is just madness, that this could open him up to a perjury charge, because Donald Trump has this tendency of making up things as he goes along. And, you know, if you're a lawyer, you don't want him to do that. So whether it'll be a subpoena or voluntarily, he keeps saying that he wants to restrict the parameters. He, the president, wants to restrict the parameters of what he says to Mueller. But, you know, Robert Mueller is very thorough. He's not doing daily leaks, as we're hearing from Giuliani and others on the Trump side. So we don't know what he has and what he knows. I mean, I think it's just a terrible risk for the president, but the president keeps saying he wants to talk to him. And so we'll see if that happens, too. If I were his attorney, and of course, if I were Donald Trump's attorney, I would probably hang myself. But if I were his attorney, I would probably say, do not sit down under oath with Robert Mueller, because, as I said, you have this tendency to say things that may not be true.
So you think that Donald Trump, being in a situation where he's right there and everything is on the record, it's not just his tweets and that sort of thing, would be the worst possible situation for the president to get himself into?
Well, of course, see, the thing is, I mean, even if he swore, you know, if he swore to tell the truth, sometimes I think that Donald Trump truly believes what he's saying. So if he truly believes what he's saying, then they are not, you know, they're not exactly lies if he's believing it. But The problem is there are a lot of things, newspapers have been reporting this for weeks, that a lot of what the president is saying, he knows not to be true, and yet he repeats it over and over again. And that's why, you know, the turnover in the staff is so great. That's why even among his legal team, there's been tremendous turnover, because the president does not take the kind of advice his legal team is giving. But again, you know, I mean, there's a lot of pressure on Mueller to come up with something before the election. You don't want him to do what James Comey did in October of 2016 by announcing with 11 days to go before the election that we have something on Hillary Clinton and we're going to investigate her. I mean, in fairness to this country, we want Robert Mueller to tell us what he knows as soon as possible. But at the same time, we want it to be thorough and complete. And that's what Mueller's doing.
Typically, a tax evasion trial might not be worthy of paying much attention to, but when you are the president's former campaign chair and there are some connections to Russia and that sort of thing, the media, all eyes are on the trial of Paul Manafort. Rick Gates is going to testify very soon, potentially this week. What's the buzz in Washington about this trial?
Well, I'm on two minds of this. First of all, you're absolutely right. This is about tax evasion and bank fraud. These are things that Paul Manafort is accused of doing before he joined the Trump campaign. So, yes, he did join him for several months in 2016. And probably the reason we care about Paul Manafort or even know his name is because he was Trump's campaign manager. But what he seems to be up against, it seems to be laundering of monies that he got for working for, you know, foreign governments, including in Ukraine, and not paying taxes on it. I don't see the actual connection to Donald Trump. And some people are saying that what Robert Mueller is doing is trying to, you know, get on Paul Manafort's case here to try him to work out a deal with the prosecutors about what he knows about Trump. But he's staying, you know, he's insisting he's not guilty. What Rick Gates, Manafort's former partner and close friend, says this week is going to be very interesting, because Gates knows everything that Manafort did. The question is whether Gates can be believed too, because he's already pled guilty to lying to the FBI. So I guess it would be it's a case between somebody who's already admitted lying and somebody who already is being accused of being lying. And it depends on which liar you want to believe. But my goodness, the choice is kind of fascinating, shall we say.
We're hearing from political junkie Ken Rudin about the Paul Manafort trial and all of the other political items swirling about in Washington, D.C. this week. Ken, what's the chances that Paul Manafort could get a pardon from the president?
Well, that, you know, something people wonder, that's why he's staying quiet, because the president is, you know, unlike Michael Cohen, who they like to say he threw under the bus, he's always saying good things about Paul Manafort. He's saying that, you know, I don't know why he should say anything. Paul Manafort is not saying anything. And people wonder that, look, Donald Trump is perfectly within his rights as president to pardon anybody who's convicted in a federal trial like this. So if Manafort is convicted, and by the way, Manafort faces a second trial more closely involved with Trump in September. But if Manafort is found guilty, sure, the president could pardon him, just like, you know, he's pardoned others before, like he did with Joe Arpaio, the controversial former sheriff in Arizona. So the president may not say that out loud, but he certainly has hinted it in his tweets and through Rudy Giuliani that the president has that right.
I think sometimes we forget about the fact that there's a second trial coming up and that it does have different legal issues. What is the focus of that second trial?
That is more involved with what he's done with pro-Russian elements in Ukraine. And of course, when you have given what we know, what the FBI seems to know or thinks it knows about Carter Page and George Papadopoulos, the two former Trump aides who have clear ties to Russians, the fact that Paul Manafort was working with pro-Russian elements in Ukraine seems to fit that mold that the FBI thinks is going on. Is about pro-Russian influences in the Trump campaign. Whether that means collusion or not, the fact is that probably Paul Manafort as I said, his name would never have been mentioned had it not been his ties with Donald Trump. And it's that September trial that probably will talk about more closer ties between Manafort and Trump than we're likely to hear this week.
Right. So with this trial, the president's defenders are repeating that there's no evidence that Manafort's conduct involves Trump. But with this second trial, it will be much harder to make that case.
That's my understanding. But either way, unlike others, unlike Michael Flynn and others in the administration, Mueller has not gotten a guilty plea. They have not admitted to lying. Manafort is denying everything all the way through. I assume it'll be the same case in September. And maybe the strategy is waiting for a pardon. But right now, Manafort has not said anything critical of the president whatsoever.
And our producer, Cody Drabble, and I this morning were having a conversation about, the many tweets that typically come out over a weekend from the president. And on Friday night, the president tweeted something involving LeBron James and one of the anchors at CNN, basically calling them both stupid. And Cody was saying, that's a distraction. That's not what we should be, talking about. Is that the president's intent when he does those things, is to distract us from other things that are going on?
You're asking me to read Donald Trump's mind, which is a fool's errand. But it is interesting the fact that he'll tweet. Look, LeBron James apparently said something critical of Donald Trump in an earlier tweet, and the president will never take a criticism lying down. So he'll fire back and, 10 times that. But the fact that he goes after Don Lemon of CNN and LeBron James and Maxine Waters, he mentioned Maxine Waters, the black congresswoman from California. He mentioned her over and over again at a rally in Pennsylvania. He seems to be going after, I'm not making this up, I mean, the evidence is there, people of color and women. And, they're dumb, they're stupid, they have low IQ. Why he does it, why... Well, look, maybe it's to distract. I mean, it's certainly not distracting Robert Mueller, and it's certainly not distracting the news media because they can walk and chew gum at the same time. But why LeBron James, who's basically was in Akron, Ohio, doing something for people of low income? I mean, he's doing things what a president should be doing, but instead the president feels that he has to take out his ire for some reason on LeBron James and Don Lemon.
Could be a self-distraction or also, just calling out to the base?
Yes, or Donald Trump being impulsive, as he always is one thing you can say about Donald Trump. He is impulsive. And if he feels something or if he sees it on Fox and Friends, he'll just tweet it out and then he'll get 63,000 likes or 63,000 retweets. It's one of the things about Twitter that I just shake my head. But my goodness, there are people who just hang on every word he's saying. And the more you rip apart the media is the enemy of the American people. They're liars. They're scum. He points out to the media at every rally. The more you believe that the media is lying, you're not going to believe any of the critical things said about Trump. And in that sense, his strategy is certainly working.
His press secretary, Sarah Sanders, has come short of saying that the press is the enemy of the people. Yet others in Donald Trump's inner circle have indicated that, no, the press is that fourth estate, something that we should respect.
Well, apparently Ivanka Trump said that, too.
Right?
That, no, it is not the enemy of the American people. But Sarah Sanders, just like Sean Spicer before that, will just say what they need to say because they're employed by Donald Trump and they have to represent what Donald Trump is thinking at all times. Good luck with that. And so when Jim Acosta of CNN said, how do you feel about the media? Is it the enemy of the American people? She said, rightly so, this is what the president is saying. So whatever you think about Sarah Sanders, she's representing the president and she's certainly doing it very well.
All right. Ken, you have the inside track. What are the stories to be following this week in Washington? Are there some big events coming up that we should know about?
Well, nothing that we haven't talked about. Obviously, Rick Gates' testimony in the Manafort trial is crucial. That special election in Ohio tomorrow is crucial, especially if the Democrat wins. People will say it means a lot and it's foreboding for what could happen in November. And also watch Chris Kobach. He's that vote fraud expert or obsessor. who's running for governor of Kansas. If he wins the Republican primary tomorrow, he's challenging the incumbent governor. If he wins, the Democrats really have a chance of winning the governorship of Kansas, because Kris Kobach is a very controversial figure, even in his home state of Kansas. That's another primary to watch.
Yeah, you know, while the base is, President Trump's base is riled up a bit, that does lend to having more far-right, harder-right candidates winning the primaries, which doesn't necessarily play out then in the general election.
That's very true. Look what's going on with Corey Stewart in Virginia. He is the Republican nominee running against Tim Kaine for the Senate. And he has taken basically pro-Confederacy, pro-white nationalist positions on many issues. He's defending his friendships with people of controversial people. And again, that works in Republican primaries. But in a state like Virginia, the only southern state that Hillary Clinton carried in 2016, I don't think that's a winning strategy at all, but maybe they don't care. Maybe they just, you know, they'll get their supporters and they'll keep them, and they'll increase their mailing lists, and winning may not be the ultimate objective, because running a white Confederacy kind of campaign in a state like Virginia, where the African-American population is increasing all the time, the demographics are just changing. And I don't know why you're doing that unless you just want to be, move up in the movement and not care whether you get elected or not.
Political junkie Ken Rudin. Always interesting to hear your thoughts, Ken. Thanks for being on Insight again this morning.
Thanks, Randall. Thanks a lot.
And we always have more on our website at capradio.org/insight. You are listening to Insight on your NPR station, Capital Public Radio. We'll be right back.